Next, I'd like to welcome Davis Rehuber from the University of Hawaii Department of Psychiatry. Dave has a bachelor's in communication and is an assistant program manager in the School of Medicine's Department of Psychiatry, the University of Hawaii at Manoa. Maybe. Thank you. His research interests include youth suicide prevention, youth violence prevention, positive youth development, and Micronesian and Pacific Islander health and acculturation. And welcome. You're on an even worse time zone than I am, so come on up. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. That was a tough act to follow. Hope I can do half as good a job. So again, my name is Dave. I'm from the University of Hawaii. I'm going to be talking about a project that we're doing on youth suicide prevention, particularly with our partnerships with the ERs across the state of Hawaii. Nothing to disclose. We are funded by SAMHSA, but the views expressed do not necessarily reflect those of SAMHSA or Center for Mental Health Services or Health and Human Services. This is what I'm going to be talking about today. We're going to just cover those as we go along. I'm just going to get right into it as far as background suicide information in Hawaii. This table shows the fatal injuries in Hawaii from 2007 to 2011. This is from the State Department of Health. And what it is the rows are rankings of fatal injuries from 1 through 5. The columns are age groups, so 1 through 14, 15 to 24, and so on. So if you notice, the thing you want to look at are the blue squares, and those are for suicides. And as you'll notice, suicides really from age 15 to 74 is the leading cause of fatal injuries in Hawaii. So this kind of provides context and purpose to the work that we need to do. It is a big public health issue. We all know that, particularly in Hawaii. Look at that. I think it's true nationwide as well. So we are the Hawaii's Caring Communities Initiative for Youth Suicide Prevention. We actually focus on youth and young adults aged 10 to 24. We are funded by SAMHSA. We just three-year grant. We've done 2 years and are heading into our last year. We do a train T4T model where we bring our partners in for trainings on suicide prevention. It's a three-day training. 3 years, that would be very good. and even though it is actually a nationally based best practice, we are very cognizant of the fact that if you're bringing something in from outside, it has to be, any activities are in the community, it has to be led by the community. As a university, we cannot just go in and tell people what to do. It's a collaboration. All the work is led by them. And it's also very culturally grounded and inclusive. If you're in Hawaii, it's a very culturally diverse area, state. Anything you need to do, you have to actually take that into consideration, actually program it into what you do, because otherwise it's not going to work. So the training that we chose to work with is CONNECT Suicide Prevention Training. They're out of New Hampshire, and we really like them because they take a public health approach to prevention. It's not just working individually on a one-on-one basis. For prevention work, you need to kind of pull back and look at everything around an individual. Everything that an individual does is informed by everything that surrounds that individual. So, for example, their friends, family, many levels and many layers of influences on that person. So we need to make sure that we take that into consideration. We like the training, too, because it's broad, but at the same time, it's very applied. So, for example, CONNECT has three modules when they do the training. Module 1 is how to recognize a person at risk for suicide. Module 2 is how to connect to that person. And Module 3, that's where the specific area comes in, depending on your discipline. So they have modules for police, they have modules for school personnel, they have modules for youth, for general community members, for ER, which we use, and for mental health, which we use as well. So it's very broad, but it's direct at the same time. We really like that about it. It provides common language around suicide prevention. For example, we don't like to use the word successful suicide because it doesn't make sense. So it promotes that kind of language that destigmatizes suicide and that allows people to actually work together and be able to collaborate. We like them because they do, they develop protocols, and I'm going to be talking about that later on, suicide screening and protocols, and they also do safe messaging, which is something that we like to do as well. But that's part of our community side, and we don't have time to talk about that today. Maybe next year our community folks will come and talk about the safe messaging, which we think is very, very important in suicide prevention. Just a real quick graph on healthcare and suicide deaths. This is from 1998. But it just kind of gives you a picture of the opportunities that we have for suicide prevention. This is for people who died by suicide after they received care for three specific settings. So psychiatric inpatient care, on the left, 41% died by suicide within 1 year of discharge. 9% died within 1 year of discharge from a psychiatric inpatient care. Now, we realize that folks who go to psychiatric inpatient care are at higher risk, so that informs that number. For community-based mental health care, 11% died by suicide within a year of discharge, and 4% died within a day. And then on the right there, at the PCP level, 83% died within a year of discharge, 20% died within a day. Now, we know that when people go to the PCP, they're not necessarily looking for or don't receive mental health help. And so that informs that those numbers as well. What we want to focus here is the opportunity that we have. If we can provide education and training at the PCP level, those numbers are surely going to come down. And we also want to promote community-based mental health care. As if we can direct people there, they're going to have better outcomes, hopefully. Screening is a huge, huge part of what we do with our ER partners. A lot of times, as you know, people will present to the ER or clinic for reasons other than, that are not obvious for mental health. They may be intoxicated, overdose or accidents, but underlying causes may be related to mental health issues. So we need to be able to screen to get at that. If you don't have the proper screening tools and ask the deeper questions, we're missing a whole bunch of people that we could actually catch before something really bad happens. So the goal of our project is to, when we work with our ERs, we go in and we set up trainings. We aim to just increase their knowledge of suicide so that they have something to work with. They know at the ER level they see people come in, but it's on a one-on-one basis. But if we can give them knowledge, then they'll know the importance of what they're doing. We want to be able for them to be confident being able to deal with a youth who comes in, and not just the youth, but everybody around him or her. And again, we want to make sure that protocols and screenings are in place. This is all the data we have for now, T4T evaluation results. Select suicide knowledge, most scores improved. From pre-post, so the training, what happens is that we come in for the training, they take a pre-test, they go through the 3 days of training, and then do a post-test. And as you can see, most of the scores improve. These are just some items. These are attitudes related to suicide prevention. Again, the scores improve remarkably well. And this is just what the training content was for them, how they related to the training. For example, on the left there, the training increased my knowledge of suicide and suicide prevention. Again, on a scale of 1 to 4, most people agreed with most of the items there. So the progress thus far, we've partnered with 17 hospitals across Hawaii out of 24. We think that's very good. They've in turn trained about 200 of their own colleagues and staff. We, HCI, have trained about 100 of other people across Hawaii. And the 644 youth screened and identified, that's kind of the outcome measure that we look for. This is only from a 9-month period. It's really hard to get ER data from 17 hospitals. And that's something that, a challenge that we really work with. But we do know that 644 youth were screened and identified with suicide risk. About 70% of them were sent home with referrals. About 20% were hospitalized, and the rest were other. So we do know that the training worked for us and for our trainees. They had more knowledge about suicide, and they felt that they could do something about it. Screenings, we're able to get that going with the hospitals that we worked with. And again, the screening data just underscores the fact that most individuals do not need to be hospitalized. They can actually be treated at alternate settings. And this is, we hear this a lot, continuity of care is very important. Our ERs, all of them say, well, they come in, we treat them, we give them other referrals, but we don't know what happens after that. So that's not unique to Hawaii. That's actually a really nationwide issue that we all need to work with. Thank you. Do you guys have any questions?
I have a couple of questions. I actually
work
in
pediatrics. Speak up so the people in the back can hear you.
Sure. So one of the questions is, was it process primary training? Was it nurses, physicians, clinical assistants? Kind of who were the trainees who were getting trained in the emergency department? Mm-hmm. And my other question is the goal for a universal screening? Because we've actually tried to implement flu screening and found that there's a relationship between the willingness to screen and the age of the kids, so that it's really hard to get practitioners to screen kids for suicide mm-hmm. who are at the younger age, so you have 10 to 24-year-olds as the target, and that if a kid's coming in for a medical issue, it's really hard to get a practitioner to screen a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old, much, you know, for suicide, as opposed to a 17, 18, 19-year-old. So I'm just curious about
right, as far as the kind of people we train, we try to get everybody within the hospital setting. It really depends on how the hospital. The bigger hospitals, it was harder to get the doctors. Actually, we didn't get any doctors across the hall. But we got, we were able to train nurses, CNAs. It really, we left it up to the hospital to choose who they wanted to train. That's really like what Connect to. But we train all sorts of folks at the hospital level, but we just didn't get any doctors, unfortunately. As for the second question, we want universal screening. It depends on the hospital. Some are already doing it. Most are not. So it just kind of depends on the hospital that we're working at the moment. Any other questions? I think some did, but most of them I don't believe did have protocols. Some had protocols for screening when they come in, but as far as what to do after that, not a whole lot of them did.
Were you able to work with them on that at all, or are you working with them?
Yeah, we are. It's something that we are working with them too.
Thank you very much. Yeah.